Good morning. Today's Dafin Suvus Yud Tes. We're on Yud Chesem and Beis. We're starting with the Bam Tanu Rabbanan and contract law, Shtaros and Edim and Kiyum Hashtar. All right, so let's go over what we did yesterday, because yesterday we opened up a discussion through the Mishnah on Yud Chesem and Beis, and we are going to be discussing for some time now this idea of Shtaros and Kiyum Hashtar. Okay, so I did this yesterday, but let's do this quickly again today, as it's basically the premise in which all of our discussion is going to be predicated on. And let's start off with the very basics. In other words, you write up a shtar. Shtar is going to be a document. Either it could ratify a sale, it could ratify a loan. It's going to be proof and evidence that the sale occurred, that the loan took place. Okay, so let's just talk about a loan. A loan is going to be a little bit easier to discuss. Although the truth of the matter is that the shtar that we're going to be discussing and the halachas that we're going to be discussing really are going to be true for a loan, for a sale. But let's just talk about a loan, because most of today's daf we're going to be talking about loans. So now, as I mentioned yesterday, but I'll say it again today. So how's the loan drafted? The loan document drafted. So you write the borrower, the lender, the amount, the date. So you put all the salient information on it. And who signs on the document? So it's not the borrower, it's not the lender. I know that sounds funny, but that's not who's signing on the document. Who's signing on the document? Shtei Edim, you have two kosher Edim signing on the document. So now what does that do? So that now is it locks and loads the shtar. The shtar now is going to be a live document, a living document, in which now the note holder is going to have the ability to go ahead and collect the loan based on the note. Good. So this is the very basics regarding it. The witnesses who are signing on it, it's ke'ilu, it's as if they're testifying. Okay, and as we pointed out yesterday, meaning min ha-Torah, so how does testimony work? I'll tell you how it works, min ha-Torah. And that is that the witnesses go to court and they testify in the courtroom, right? That's generally speaking, every single time in the Torah, you see Edom, it's in the context of actually giving oral testimony in the courtroom. But we're not talking about oral testimony right now. We're talking about testimony via their signatures. So how is that construed? How is that interpreted? So it's ki'ilu, it's like they're giving testimony in the courtroom. The Rambam writes, I quoted this Rambam yesterday. I didn't give you a Mar Makom yesterday. I'm not giving you a Mar Makom right now. But the Rambam writes that the Yishtaros is a Din D'Rabbanan, meaning that the Chachamim realized that basically, look, there has to be some vehicle in which we're going to be able to capture the Edis. So I don't need the witnesses there physically there all the time. And so how are we going to do it? We'll do it via shtar. And so the signatures are going to be viewed as if they're given testimony in court. We saw this language yesterday, right? This idea that when Edom signed on the shtar, they're giving testimony in court. So that was the line that we saw yesterday. I'm going to quote it. It's on Yud Chesam and Beis. So Amr Yish Lakish Edom Achasum Amal Ashtar Nasa Kemisha Nechkara Edusam Bebeisdin. It's like they gave testimony in court. Good. So now we have a document with two witnesses, and that's it. The document now has gone live. And so this is now going to be a locked and loaded note in which the note holder can now collect. The Chachamim were concerned. In other words, the idea that notes get forged and that's not a new idea. This has been going on for some time. And so the Chachamim placed in a security measure. A way of just double-checking and ensuring that this document is, in fact, an authentic document. And so there's an idea, there's a concept called Kiyum Hashtaros, authenticating the document. So this is a Din D'Rabbanan. I mean, again, Shtaros in of itself could be a Din D'Rabbanan, but this is a Din D'Rabbanan, the authentication of a document, Kiyum Hashtar. And how is Kiyum Hashtar done? So we did this yesterday, but let's do it again today, as this is going to be most of what we're going to be discussing over the course of today. So there are three different ways in which we can be Mekayem Hashtar. Number one, what you can have is those who sign on the document are going to go to court and say, pointing to the signatures, that's our signature. Okay, so Kiyum Hashtar can be done by the actual Edim themselves. Now what's going to happen? What's going to happen is that Beis Din's going to be accepting and receiving their testimony and then writing a note. I'll write on the bottom of the note, right along their signatures, we, the Beis Din, have now authenticated this document. Okay, there's an actual language that's written down. I believe, if I remember correctly, I hope I do, is that the Gemara is going to give us the language a little bit later on in terms of what the authenticating language is going to be. But anyway, that's one way to do so. A second way to do so is that you have another pair of witnesses who recognize the signature and authenticate the signatures of those who signed on the document. Okay, as I described yesterday, right? I don't know that many people's signatures, but in other words, certainly my employer or whoever's signing my checks. So I, generally speaking, recognize those signatures, whatever. So back in the day, signatures were pretty popular. In fact, the Gemara goes on to describe that various Amoraim had custom designed signatures that they had. We all do, meaning that's just simply the nature of our handwriting. Our handwriting is very personal and usually is very describable, so recognizable. And so if other people recognize it, that's the second way to authenticate it. And finally, a third way to authenticate a signature is that let's say we have another document, based and happens to have another document that already went through authentication. So now if we compare the two documents and the signatures match on an already authenticated document and comparing it to this document that we'd like to authenticate, that's another way to do so as well. So there are various ways in which Kiyum HaShtaros can be done. So as we just went over, why are we discussing this here in Ksuvos? Meaning this is a strange place to talk about it. It sounds much more like a Bava Kama, Metzia or Basra discussion. And meanwhile, it's over here in Ksuvos. So first of all, we discuss everything in Ksuvos. Ksuvos is, right, Shas Katan, it's a platform in which we discuss all different topics. However, and that's true, however, we got onto this because we discussed the concept, the idea of a Pesha Asru or a Pesha Hitter, that the same mouth that can incriminate is going to be now given credibility. This is a form of migu. In other words, when you are in a position where you create liability for yourself, so then with that same mouth, you can go ahead and extricate yourself from that liability. So over here, if I have the witnesses coming and they say, yes, we signed on the document, but, so in other words, that's an example of a Pesha Asur or a Pesha Hitter, and that's why we're discussing it over here. What did we learn yesterday in the Mishnah? So the Edim coming forward and say, Ksav Yadenu Huzeh, we signed on this document. However, Anusim Hayinu, Ketanim Hayinu, Psule Edus Hayinu. So, but let's just explain to you what the context was when we signed on it, and we were disqualified at the time when we signed on it. Ne'emanim, they're going to be believed. This is an example of a Pesha Asur or a Pesha Hitter. That's what we learned yesterday in the Mishnah. We continue. We are now in the Gemara in Yud Ches Amud Beis. We are about 6-7 lines from the bottom of the Amud. We're starting with the words Tanu Rabbanan. Let's begin. So, after the Edom themselves come to court to authenticate their own signatures, so they then declare that they were apostle at the time. Machlok is here in the Braisa, according to the Chachamim Ne'emanim. Now, the Chachamim is like our Mishnah, meaning that we were expecting to hear that. Rameir is an exciting shita because Rameir says they're not going to be believed, meaning they're going to be believed regarding the authentication, but they're not going to be believed regarding the context in which they signed. When they say that they were apostle, Rameir says, I don't believe them. Now, the Gemara says, now, Rameir needs explanation, meaning according to the Chachamim, we don't have to explain anything. We know the concept, the principle. HaPesha Asur Hu HaPesha Hitter. So that's behind the Shita of the Chachamim. But what's behind the Shita of Meir? So the Gemara goes on to explain. So Bisham L'Rabban Akita Ma'isha Pesha Asur Hu HaPesha Hitter El Rameir Ma'itayma. What's the reason behind Rabbi Meir? So Bisham Psule Edus Ma've Gufay Mikara Meidag Daiku Ma'achtam. So the Gemara says, first of all, Psule Edus. So the Gemara says, look, we have to balance that with the following. Obviously, this note involves a borrower and a lender. So let's focus on the lender for just a moment. The lender obviously wants to get paid back. In other words, this for him now represents a financial sacrifice. He's lending money to somebody else, and he wants to get paid back. So let me ask you a question. When he gathers the Edom together, do you think he's going to be looking for Psule Edom? Obviously not. Obviously, he's going to be looking for the best Edom that he could find. And so, on one hand, these Edomers say we were apostle at the time. And that's really going against, let's call it a chazakah. Okay? In other words, the general presumption is that the Malva is not going to gather together Psule Edos. Now, it's true. I don't imagine the Malva is going to know everything about these Edom. But if for considering the fact that right now he's lending money and he's at the risk of losing money, you don't think he's going to be looking for the best Edim? Right? It doesn't have to be the best Edim. Just kosher Edim. So, in other words, Rav Meir will tell you that their testimony is really going against the chazaka. And so therefore, we're going to be more inclined to follow the chazaka that the malvega kasher edim rather than the edim themselves who are testifying about themselves. Okay. Ketanu nami kedu Rav Shem HaMelekesh, Tama Rav Shem HaMelekesh, chazaka in edim chaz melech shalem ke nasa begadol. And also, look, on their claim that they were ketanim at the time, again, it goes against the chazaka. Reish Lakish says that we have a general presumption that witnesses signing on a document are not ketanim. Again, generally speaking, when we're talking about shtar, so there are people that are involved, generally speaking, people who know what they're doing. You think they're going to invite a katan to go ahead and sign on the document? It's really unlikely. So that's why their claim that they were ketanim at the time also is going to get dismissed. Okay, fine. So, were they psula edim? So again, this is all Reb Meir. No, unlikely. Were they ketanim at the time? Also, unlikely. What about the third claim? Anusim hayinu. That seems like a pretty plausible claim. Meaning they were telling you that, look, we signed on this document, that part's true, but we were coerced to do that. Right? Let's make this ridiculous. We had a gun to our head. And so therefore, we signed on the document. So that sounds at least plausible, meaning they're not saying they were apostle, they're not saying they were ketanim, but they're saying that they were forced. So Alainus, in my time, Amr Rav Chista Kasav Rav Meir Eidim Sharmu Lahem, Chis Mushek V'al Ta'argu Yagu V'al Yechas Musheker. So the Gemara attempts to give a pshat in Rav Meir. You know, Rav Meir says, gun to your head and you're asked to falsely sign on a document. So you know what you should do? You should give up your life. That's what you should do. That's what Rav Meir holds. So therefore, when they're testifying and saying that, we signed the document at gunpoint. So Rav Meir says, you know why I don't believe them? Because they made the wrong decision. Because they should have given up their lives. And what are they doing now? They're saying that they did the wrong thing. Ein adam esim esatzma rasha. So the Gemara says that can't be pshat Rameir. It can't be. Amale Rava hashta ilu asu lekamen lamluche amrin lehu zilah chasuma velo tikteluhun dam amar in lecha davar shomei bifnei pikuach nefesh ella avodas kocham vegila aras v'shvichas damim bavad hashta dechismu amrin lehu amai chasim masu. So Rava says, look, if anyone came to me and asked me, what do I do? Meaning, I had a gun to my head. Should I be signing on a document? I would say, of course you should sign on the document. In other words, the only time you give up your life are for the big three. This is not one of the big three. You're not going to give up your life. You're not supposed to give up your life. And so, okay. So anyway, so Rava just dismisses this as a suggestion in explaining Rav Meir. So Ella time of the Rav Meir. Okay, so we're on to our next explanation, Rav Meir. Again, what are we trying to explain? Rav Meir says that when the Edim are authenticating their signatures, and they say that they were, at the time, Pasul Eidus, alternatively, Ketanim, alternatively, they were forced to do so, in any one of those circumstances, Rav Meir says, I don't believe them. So we explained the first two, we're trying to explain the third one, so that they were forced to do so. Ela time de Rav Meir, ked Rav Huna Amarav, dam Rav Huna Amarav, mod de bishtar shekasro, ein tzarech lekaimo. So now we're learning a new halacha, and that is that there's going to be an occasion where the document doesn't need to be authenticated. Notably, when the borrower admits and agrees that this document was drafted. Oh, okay, in other words, so, and it makes sense, meaning this is intuitive. In other words, the borrower obviously is the one who is standing to lose the most, right? I could say it even stronger. He's the one standing to lose. In other words, right now, this document is creating a liability for him. And if he is now admitting that this document was in fact drafted, so then we don't have to go through the authentication process. Meaning, it's a good document. I have witnesses on it. Kiyum Sharis is a security measure. But if the borrower himself is telling you that this document is a good document, so we can bypass this measure of Kiyum Ashar. Okay, fine. And under those circumstances, now witnesses are coming and they're giving us a story. Well, you know, when we signed on it, with that, ba 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 ba. In other words, at this point in time, once the Lova admits that the document's good, we don't need Kiyum Ashtar. So basically, we don't need to hear from the witnesses. And now they want to give us a story? We don't need you. And since we don't need you, we're no longer in the category of HaPesha Asaru HaPesha Hitter. Okay, Gufa. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav Mode B'Shtar Shekasru in Tarech L'Kaimo. So this is a halacha that once the borrower agrees that this document was in fact drafted, no need for verification. Amle Rav Nachman Genuvi Genuvi Lamalach. So Rav Nachman says to Rav Huna, you're a thief. Meaning that you're saying over this halacha as if you came up with this halacha on your own. You didn't come up with this halacha. This was said previously. I don't understand. If the halacha in fact is like Rav Meir, say it. Say the halacha is like Rav Meir. So Amar Le Umar Hechi Svir Le. He says, well, okay. So in other words, what would you say? So Amar Le Kiasul Kamandina Amrin Lahu Zilu Kimu Sharechu V'Chusul Ledina. So Rav Nachman says, here's what I would say. I would say that even when the borrower agrees that this document was drafted, the loan document was drafted, I still would require authentication. Meaning Rav Nachman's basically saying, look, there's a concept of Kiyum HaShtar. Kiyum HaShtar is a security measure. It's an authentication measure. And we're going to be using it under all circumstances. The borrower is telling us that the document's good. Great, the document's good. There still is this requirement of Kiyum HaShtar. Rav Nachman basically saying, I don't subscribe to Rav Meir. Okay. I'm reviewed on Rav. We're in Yud Testament Aleph. We're halfway down on the Amud. HaOmer Shtar Amana Hu Zeh. Einu Neman. Okay. So let's say that this document over here is the Shtar Amana. Okay, now, who's making this claim? We're going to clarify in just a moment. But before we get to the who, let's first figure out what we're talking about. What's the what over here? What is the Shtar Amana? So Shtar Amana is a loan document, but basically, it's similar to, it's not the same, but it's similar to a line of credit. It's not exactly the same. Basically what happens is the following. I go to a lender and I say to the lender, look, I don't need the money right now, but I would like to be ready. So what I'd like from you now is, I would like a note. We date it now. It's fine. In other words, but with the understanding, however, that I didn't actually borrow the money yet. And then when I need the money, so in other words, we'll be ready. In other words, the note is already drafted, and I could just simply go over to you, and I can collect the money from you whenever I want.
What's the point? Just explain.
I assume just to expedite. I assume that the point over here is to expedite. Okay. Pre-approval. Also, right? It's a form of pre-approval, but again, it's more than that because the note is actually written up. So number one, expedite, and number two. It makes the lender look like, you know, he's got to count receivables. May help him look a little bit better in terms of his credit rating, whatever the case is. Okay, but let's go with expediting. I think that's the best explanation in terms of why this would be used. Anyway, the Gemara, as we're going to just see in a moment, is really unhappy with a shtar amana for obvious reasons, because the note does not reflect the truth. The note would indicate that the loan already occurred, and then an oral history. Well, he didn't actually borrow the money yet. We just wrote the note up just in the event that when he wants to borrow the money, I'm going to give it to him. But in other words, but the note is not reflecting what in fact is the truth. In other words, the note's a lie. And so, as you can imagine, the Chachamim are extraordinarily unhappy with this. And now we're going to go backwards. So I'm Rav Yudam Rav Homer Shtar Amana Huzeh Eino Ne'eman. So the person, again, we have to identify who he is. But the person says it's a Shtar Amana, he's not going to be believed. So man. So the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. Elam Dekar Lo V'Pshita Kol Kaminei. Now, who are we not believing? Are we not believing the Lova? I don't need a halacha to tell me that, meaning it's pretty obvious. Right? Imagine the borrower says, I know he's holding a note against me, but he never really lent me the money. Okay, thank you. Have a seat. Of course we're not going to believe him. So ve'ela dekamra malva. So tavala brecha. So the malva says it. Okay, the malva says it. Fine, of course we're going to believe him. Meaning he's the one who stands to lose right now by saying that this is a shtar amana. Okay, well, so we'll believe him. So in other words, and again, it's so obvious. I don't need an amar to tell me this. So Ella de Kamri Adim. So the Gemara says, well, the witnesses are saying it. So Edik Savyadam Yosim Makamachita Delomehemne. So the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. Do I need them to authenticate the document? Because if the authentication is coming from an outside source, which again, go back to the beginning of today's shir, we're in the introduction, where it can. the authentication can be done from an outside source. So if that's the case, I don't need these witnesses. So of course we're not going to believe them regarding the labeling of this document as a shahr mana. So the Gemara says, now, if they're authenticating the document, so why aren't they believed? Meaning, again, we left the world of Rameir, we go back to our Mishnah. If you're the one authenticating the note, so then you're going to be believed about more or less anything you say. And including that this is a shtar amana. So why wouldn't you be believed? So right now we have it that the Edom are describing the loan document as a shtar amana, meaning the money wasn't actually lent. Note was drafted, but the money was not actually lent. Right? The borrower and the lender basically said to one another, I trust you. Well, really, the borrower is saying to the lender, I trust you. Meaning right now I don't need the money. We're drafting the note. In the future, when I need the money, I'll come to you and I'll take the money. And the Edom right now, who are authenticating the document, they're the one reporting that this is a shtar amana. And what did we just learn together? They're not believed. Why not? Meaning, if they're authenticating, so then they should be believed. The Gemara is going to give three solutions to this problem. Number one, Amar Rav Lolam Dekamar Lova Kedarav Huna Damar Rav Huna Amar Rav Mode B'Shar Shekasra In Tzarech L'Kaimo. So the Gemara says, no, we're going back to the Lova. And we subscribe to the Shita of Rav Huna Amar Rav, or not we, but the Rav Huna Amar Rav subscribes to the Halacha of Rav Huna Amar Rav, that when the Lova admits and acknowledges that the document was in fact drafted, so Ain't Tzarech L'Kaimo, there's no longer a need for Kiyum HaShtar. Since there's no longer a need for Kiyum HaShtar, the witnesses therefore are not given the credibility to be believed under these circumstances. Or to say it otherwise, we don't have the concept now of Apesh Asur Apesh Yeter. That's one solution. Abay Amar La'olam Da'amar Malva. The Malva was the one who said it. Ukigon She Chav Lachem Uchadrav Nasan. Ah, the Malva said it. Now what do we say regarding the Malva? We said regarding the Malva, good for him. Meaning he wants to say that this loan document is in fact never, it was a drafted document, not just drafted. It was a signed document, but I never lent the money. Good for him. Meaning he wants to create liability for himself. Why not? Let him do so. The Gemara says, no, what we're talking about over here, this is the second solution, is that he's a lender. He's also a borrower. In other words, he himself has debt. So under those circumstances now, for him to waive this loan is also now going to create liability for his own lenders. And what do we know? We have this halacha come up all the time throughout Shas, and this is Pruta de Rabbi Nasan. The La'olam Damar Malva, Ukigon Shechav Lachem, Uchud Rav Nasan, Detanya Rabbi Nasan Omer, Minan Lenosha Bechaver, Manel Vechaver, Bechaver, Minan Shemotziyam, Mizem Venosan Lezeh, Tamar Lomer, Venosan Lasher, Hashem Lo. So the halacha is like this. If let's say we have a lender, We have multiple lenders, right? Reuven, Shimon, Levi. So Reuven lends to Shimon, and Shimon lends to Levi. So now Levi owes Shimon, and Shimon owns Reuven. So now what Reuven can do is that Reuven can go straight to Levi, okay? And this halacha that now we can bypass the middleman, and you can go now to your borrower's borrower, and you can collect directly from him. So this is a halacha. So over here in this case, where the loan document is now being described by shtar amana, it's being described like that by the malva, but the middle malva, which means that he on one hand is owed money, but he also owes to somebody else. So by him now saying that this is a shtar amana, he's not just hurting himself; he's hurting his lender. He can't do that. Okay, shibuta de Rabbi Nasan. Okay, good. So Rav Ashi Amar, we're up to now the third answer of the Gemara. Lolam de kamar edim. So the Gemara says, we're going to go back to our original proposal, and that is that this is the Edom that are saying it. And the truth of the matter is that they're authenticating their own signatures. Again, the Edom are saying this is Shtar Amana. They're the ones who are authenticating their signatures. So why aren't they believed? So here we come up now with the third answer of the Gemara, the third approach. Because having a shtar amana in your possession is not just a bad idea. It is a bad idea. But it's more than just a bad idea. It's usur. In other words, you are holding a lie in your hand. Okay, we're not saying this allegorically. We're saying this literally. You're holding a lie in your hand. And the pasuk in Eov, al tishkan ba'olacha avla. You should not have this such a calamity, such a disaster in your house. And so, since it's an iser, so now what are these edim saying? That we co-signed, literally, we co-signed on an iser. No, you can't say that. Meaning, you can't report that in Beis Din. Ein adam mesim es atzma rasha. That would be incriminating on your part. Okay, so that's why they're not going to be believed. The Amar, we're on the top of the Amud Beis. The Amar of Sheshes Berei Deravi Dishmamina Midderav Kahana Edim Shamar Amana Hayud Varenu Ein Emanim. So when witnesses say that Amana Hayud Varenu, that yes we signed, but it was a Shtar Amana, they're not going to be believed. My time Kevin to Avlahu Avla Lo Chasme, meaning they're not going to be signing on an Avla, and certainly their testimony that they did sign on it is just simply going to be discredited. Amar Rav Yeshua ben Levi also lo la'adam shisha shtar parua besoch beso. Other things that you cannot leave in your house is a shtar parua, meaning the note was paid up. And now, under normal circumstances, what should the borrower do after he pays up his note? So it's very simple. Instructions over here are really simple. Get your hands on that note, meaning exchange the payment for the actual note itself. And then when you get the note in your hands, what do? So, right, the shredder. So you destroy it. So good. That's what you're supposed to do. Now, what if somehow the lender convinces the borrower, look, right, thank you very much for paying me up. I'm just going to hold on to this note for like another week, another month. I don't know. For whatever reason, the borrower agrees to do so. So Rav Yeshua ben Levi says, that's an iser. Again, just more than just bad advice, meaning obviously it's a really bad idea. But aside from that, it's also an iser. Mishum shenem ra tishkan ba'olacha avla. Ben ma'arava mishmei de Rav Amri ein im avon. In the name of Ula, I'm sorry, in Eretz Yisrael, in the name of Rav, so they quoted another pasuk in Eov, im avon biyadecha archiku. If you have some sort of sin in your hand, so you should distance yourself from it. That is the description of Shtar Aman and Shtar Pasim. Again, basically these fictitious notes that didn't really represent an actual loan. And as far as the second pasuk in Eov, so that's the description of Ishtar Parua. Once the loan is paid, you, the lender, should not be holding the note any longer. If you do so, yeah, that's an Avla. So, Mandam Ishtar Parua, Koshkein Ishtar Amana. Now, if you say that the pasuk of Al Tishkan Ba'olach Avla is a reference to Ishtar Parua, so for sure Ishtar Amana. Ishtar Amana is a bigger lie, it's a bigger fiction. Ishtar Amana, the loan never happened. Shtar Parua, it's a fiction in the sense that now that it's paid and you're still holding on to the note, it looks like you haven't been paid yet. So yes, that's a fiction. It's not as fictitious as the Shtar Amana. So if you are calling a Shtar Parua an Avla, for sure a Shtar Amana is for sure an Avla. However, man dam a Shtar Amana, Avla Shtar Parua lo, dezimnin demashelei, apshita desafra. And the Gemara points out that, you know what? So we could make the argument that Shtar Amana is no question about that's an Avla. And it's a fiction. And that's an Avla. But as far as the Shtar Parua is concerned, actually, there would be one good way to justify why the lender is holding on to the Shtar even after the note's been paid up. And the Gemara describes it as Pshita de Safra. What is Pshita de Safra? So that's the money used to pay the sofer. Meaning, Let's go back to the origination of the note. So the note has to be drafted. We need to go to somebody to write it up. A sofer. Okay. What do you think? He's going to do it for free? In other words, the guy needs to make a living. So somebody's going to pay him. Who pays him? The lender or the borrower? Okay. So the borrower is going to pay. In other words, the borrower is right now in the position of need. So he's going to be paying the sofer. Okay. Now one can easily imagine that right now, he's in a position where he needs so much, he doesn't have the money to pay the sofer. So he says to the lender, look, here's what I need from you. Could you spot me? Okay, so I need the money, and I just don't have the money right now to pay the sofer. So could you spot me? So the lender says, sure, no problem at all. Lender anyway is being magnanimous, he's being generous in lending the money. Fine, no problem at all. You want me to pay this offer? I'll do so as well. Ah, now we get to the term of the end of the loan. And now the lover says, good, I have the money to pay. So the lender says, that's great. And the sofer's money as well? And so the borrower says, darn. I'll come back with that. So the lender now can legitimately say to the borrower, look, good, I'm happy you paid me back. I'll take the money right now. I'm holding the note until you pay the sofer. Ah, so there is justification. There's a good reason why it is that the lender would be holding the note. Ah, so at least we could make an argument that ishtar parua, why is the lender still holding the note? There could be a good reason why. And so therefore, you could make the argument that the ishtar parua being held by the lender is not an avla. Shtar amana, absolutely an avla. It's a fiction. It's a total fiction. The loan never occurred. Okay, but the
ishtar amana could be considered fraud.
Yeah, it is.
It's fraud.
It's fraud. So right, you're saying it better than me. It's fraud. It's just simply not true. Okay, itmar. One more point. This is obviously going to be a tangent, and that is sefer shena muga amar Rabbi Ami ad lamed yom muta l'shoso mikan ve'elachas l'shoso. You have mistakes in your sefer Torah, so you're given an allowance of 30 days to allow it to sit around the house, but after 30 days, no mishum shenem al tishkam ba'olach avla. Now over here. This is going to be considered an avla that's in your house. Okay, now, the Gemara doesn't really give much of an explanation in terms of why 30 days becomes like a magic number, but if I may guess, and I'm guessing, so again, take what I'm saying with a grain of salt. But after 30 days, what people are going to do is that the human nature, people are going to forget that it's a mistaken Sefer Torah. I know what we do is that we take the gartel, we put it around the Sefer Torah in order to indicate that it's a Sefer Torah with mistakes in it. But anyway, after 30 days, people are going to forget, and we're never going to get back to it. So, once you leave it around your house more than 30 days, that's considered an avla. Okay. Am Rav Nachman, Edim Shamru, Amana Hayudvarinu, Ne'amanim, Moda Hayudvarinu, Ne'amanim. Okay, so, things that we're not ready to listen to when the witnesses come and authenticate their signatures. So when they say that's the shtar amana, so we're not going to believe them. Again, they're testifying about something which is fraudulent, and they are saying about themselves that they signed on a fraudulent document. Nope, not ready to believe you. Ein adam meisim etzatzma rasha. Ah, but what if they come along and they say, you know what, there's a little bit of an oral history over here to this document. And that is that moda. Now, what's moda? So right now, here's what the seller did. Seller right now got a lot of pressure to sell whatever he sold. Right? So let's say it's a property. So the seller got a lot of pressure to sell. And, right, a lot of pressure. Let's even say that he was threatened once or twice. Okay. So basically, the seller's like, I got to get this guy off my back. And right now, I don't have recourse other than to just simply draft a document and have it signed. I'm going to pull the Edom over and I'm going to say to the Edom, look, I'm selling under duress. And when the Edom come later at a later point in time to authenticate their signatures, can they give this oral history now to this written document? Ah, good question. So according to Rav Nachman, so when they say that the shtar was a shtar amana, or where they say that there was a moda that was issued by the seller, ein ne'emanim, they're not going to be believed. So Rav Nachman is not ready to receive any kind of oral history together with the written document. Marbar Ravashi Amar Amana Hayudvarinu Ne'emanim Oda Hayudvarinu Ne'emanim, and Marbar Ravashi disagrees. He says that the that Shtar Amana, again, it's fraud, and we're not gonna believe the Edom when they say it's a Shtar Amana. But a Moda Hayudvarinu, if they say that the seller pulled us aside and told us that he's selling under duress and he is not really compliant with the sale, so then they're going to be believed. My time, ahani tan likasev, ahai lo nitan likasev. Because when it comes to a shtar amana, should a shtar amana be written under any circumstance? No. Period. It's fraud. It should never be written. However, shtar moda, so should it be written? Yeah. In other words, if the guy's really being threatened, and he's really scared for his life, and this piece of paper now is going to save him right now for the time being. So absolutely. So write it up. So, okay. So Marbar of Nasan, I'm sorry, Marbar of Ashi is of the position that a the witnesses are authenticating are going to be believed when they also not only authenticate the signatures, but give this oral history that the seller sold under duress, they're going to be believed. So what if now the witnesses give another oral history to the document? Notably, there was a stipulation. So there was an attachment that was never actually physically attached to the document. Okay? Some sort of condition that was put into the sale. But we are only knowing this because of the witnesses now who are giving us an oral history. Yes, do we believe them? No, do we not believe them? So on one hand, so why don't we believe when they say that's a shtar mana or a shtar moda, even though, by the way, we just got done going over that by a shtar moda'a, so there's a machlokus on that. But we're just highlighting differences when it comes to a shtar mana, shtar moda'a. So what are they doing? They're effectively uprooting the document. You can't do that. And maybe, same thing with a condition. Meaning that when they're saying that there's a condition that was not met, they're uprooting the document. Or maybe no. Maybe when we look at a condition, we look at it as a condition, not as part and parcel of the actual document, but something that is different. Meaning, it is categorically testifying about a separate entity. Now granted, by the way, it's a condition to the document, but it is, right? We say this, this is how we speak in the vernacular. It's an attachment. So over here, maybe when they're testifying about a condition, maybe the condition is not considered part and parcel of the document. So Amalei ki asu lekam ledina. Amrin lehu zilu kaime tenaicha v'chusa ledina. So Rav Nachman asks this question. Rav Nachman says, "Here's what I'll say." If the witnesses who are authenticating, saying that there was a condition that was riding along on the sale, so Rav Nachman says, I'll honor that. In other words, I'll accept their testimony, and I'll say now to whoever needs to satisfy the condition, look, in order for this contract to go through, condition has to be satisfied. Eid Omer Tanai, Ve'eid Omer Einu Tanai. Okay, so, one more discussion for today. One witness says that there was a condition. In other words, again, you have two witnesses signing on the document, they're both coming into court, they're both authenticating their signature. And then one of those two witnesses says, oh, by the way, there's a tanai that's riding on this document. Amra papa tavai bishtar ma'ali kamasad vahide kamar tanai, havalechad vein dvarav shalacha b'makum shtayim. So Rav Papa says, here's how I'm going to look at this case. They're both authenticating the document. That's called two witnesses, right? Authenticating the document. One of them is saying that there was a condition. So even though I understand they're not three witnesses in total, but still, how many testimonies do we have? Two over the document, that's the authentication, and one on the condition. And so therefore, what is that in halacha? 2v1. Two witnesses versus one witness. We know what to do now. So that, in other words, we dismiss the one in the face of the two. Meaning Rav Papa's ruling is that we'll authenticate the document and we'll ignore the witness who said that there was a condition. So maskev la Rav Huna b'reid Rav Yeshua yachi afilu tavayu nami. So Rav Huna b'reid Rav Yeshua says, I don't understand. Shouldn't we say the same thing regarding two? Meaning, if you're viewing the testimony over the condition as a separate testimony, so now allow me to ask you. Let's say both of them say that there was a condition. So the way you're viewing it, I have them authenticating the document. That let's call that now. Testimony, one set of testimony, that's two. And then they're saying that there was a condition. Okay, that's another two. Now that's 2v2. Now normally what happens 2v2, so normally we call that Edim HaMachishim Zedzeh. But over here, in other words, right, but over here, once they authenticate the document, that's it. Document now is good. Now they want to say something that runs contrary to the document. Shouldn't we just ignore them? So Ella Amrinan, Hani Lameikar Sadai Sukasi, Hainami Lameikar Sadai Sukasi. So over here, no. When they're saying that there's a condition on the document, they're looking to uproot the document. Meaning, according to Rav Huna b'reid Rav Yehoshua, a condition is not something separate from the document itself. It's part and parcel of the document. Meaning he's disagreeing with what we said previously. Previously we looked at it as a an attachment, but not part and parcel. Now, according to Rav Huna Bered to Rav Yeshua, no, the condition is considered part and parcel of the document. As such, for them to say that, yes, they signed on the document, but yes, there also was a condition, so that's basically uprooting their testimony.
Why are you saying that by them saying the condition, they're voiding the document?
Because they're also saying the condition wasn't satisfied. Oh, okay. V'hilchasa k'Rav Huna Bered Rav Yeshua, and the Gemara says that the way we just said it, meaning Rav Huna Bered Rav Yeshua, that's the accepted halacha, that their testimony about a condition is not something separate from the document, it's part and parcel of the document. Therefore, what they're really looking to do is uproot the document, and that they cannot do. Okay. Atkan.
You separate the two, like two different aides.
Correct.
The aides on the shtar is accepted, the other
Correct. Okay. Good. All right. Right. Perfect. Okay. So that's it, and that's where we're going to stop today. And let's just quickly recap. Okay. Well, where we began today is that machlokus between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. Despite the fact that our Mishnah says that when the Edom come and authenticate their signatures, the Mekayim Shtar, so they are going to be believed based on the principle of HaPesh HaAser HaPesh HaEter. So what we started today is with the Braisa, espousing the viewpoint not only of the Chachamim of our Mishnah, but also Rav Meir. Rav Meir says they're not going to be believed. Why are they not going to be believed? So the Gemara really struggled with Rav Meir, and that took up half of the first Amud of today's Daf. Yutes Amud Aleph, we look for a pshat behind Rav Meir. Anyway, but we don't follow like Rav Meir, but at least we attempted to say pshat and Rav Meir. Then, right in the middle of Yutes Amud Aleph, we got onto the discussion of Shtar Amana. Shtar Amana is a document that was drafted, signed, but the loan never actually transpired. There was no money changing hands. Why did the lender do this? Why did the buyer do this? So basically the buyer says to the lender, look, I want to be ready to take the money. So I want to be cash ready. So we have the document already drafted, and now I'll just come to you at a later point in time, and I'll just take the money. Shtar Amana, the Gemara is extraordinarily unhappy to the point where the Gemara calls an Isser to have a Shtar Amana. Alan said it beautifully. It's fraud. It really is just fraud. In other words, it's a document that does not represent an actual loan. So, what if Edom authenticating the document say that the document's a Shtar Amana, they're not going to be believed? So why are they not going to be believed? In other words, when we say the they, so are we talking about the Edom? Are we talking about the Lova? We're talking about the Mava? The Gemara offers three different pshatim over there, Rava, Abaye, and Ravashi, and that takes us to the end of Yutes Amud Aleph. Then, on Yutes Amud Beis, other things which are in Avla, Shtar Parua. Let's say you're holding a note which actually represented a loan, but after the loan was paid up, the lender's still holding the note. That's also an avla. But then the Gemara pushed back a little bit. It may not be. There can be circumstances in which the lender is in fact entitled to hold on to the note, notably when the sofer was not paid. Okay. And finally, we discussed three things that the witnesses are going to say in which we know for sure. If the witnesses who are authenticating say it was a shtar amana, they're not going to be believed. If the witnesses say that it was a moda'a, so in other words, that the seller pulled them aside before the sale and said, I'm selling under duress, they are going to be believed. The difference, of course, being that a shtar moda should be, in fact, rewritten up, especially if the seller's life is going to be saved by writing it up. Okay, and finally, the last thing that we deliberated is that what if the witnesses are giving us an oral history of the document, notably that there was a condition writing on the document. So is that considered something separate from the note, or is it considered part and parcel? That's exactly the machlokus amongst the Amoraim, and the Gemara favored the argument that it's part and parcel of the note. Adta.